Welcome back, everyone. We're diving into some fascinating religious texts today. Excerpts from, well, it's actually called Untitled Document.
Okay.
But trust me, the content is anything but. It chronicles Jacob's journey, you know?
Right.
From that young guy fleeing his brother Esau's anger.
Yeah.
To a patriarch returning to Canaan after 20 years.
20 years.
Loaded with family and a whole lot of wealth.
It's quite the transformation, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it wasn't just like miles on a map.
Right, exactly.
That was a huge shift in his character and his whole relationship with God while navigating, I don't know, the crazy legal stuff of the ancient Near East.
Okay, so let's break this down. The text picks up with Jacob. He wants to go home after working for Laban, what, 14 years?
13, yeah.
Especially now that Rachel's finally had Joseph.
Joseph.
But it wasn't a simple see ya later kind of deal, was it?
No, not at all. Rachel's inability to have kids before.
Right.
And then having Joseph, that plays a big part here. In ancient times, having kids, especially for the wife.
Yeah.
It wasn't just personal. It was all about power and inheritance.
I see.
So Rachel not having children for so long could have made Jacob feel, you know, vulnerable.
Especially with those laws, right? The, what was it, Hurrian?
Hurrian Hittite law.
Yeah, that sounds intense.
It had some tough stuff for families like Jacob's.
Okay, how so?
Imagine this. Under that law, Jacob's family might have actually belonged to Laban.
Wait, what? Like, his own wife and kids were property.
It's wild,
right? It's just crazy.
It shows you how different things were back then.
Totally.
It would have been, like, massive pressure on Jacob to get them all free.
Makes sense.
Totally different from, like, the Sinai covenant, where the family could leave with a freed servant.
So Jacob asking to leave wasn't just about him. It was, like, this whole family freedom mission.
Exactly. And, of course, Laban, the businessman.
Oh, yeah. He wasn't going to let that go easily.
He loved having a workforce, especially one he thought brought him, like, good luck. He even tried divination to figure out why things were going so well for him.
Divination? Wasn't that kind of forbidden, especially with the whole Sinai covenant thing?
Ironic, right. The very thing forbidden by the covenant reveals that Laban's good fortune is thanks to Jacob's God, Yahweh.
Oh, wow.
But even then, Laban's still scheming to take advantage of Jacob.
Some people never learn, I guess. So did they make a deal at all?
They did. But Laban had some tricks up his sleeve, as always.
I bet.
He said Jacob could tend the flocks.
Okay.
And take the rarer colored animals as wages.
So the ones that probably have more of the same color offspring.
You got it.
Sounds fair, I guess. But with Laban, there's got to be a catch.
You know him too well. He removes all the black sheep and speckled goats.
Oh, come on. Trying to rig the game from the start?
Totally setting Jacob up to fail.
So how did Jacob handle that? Did he just take it lying down?
Not Jacob. He came up with this plan. A breeding plan.
Oh.
Using, get this, peeled branches from specific trees.
What, like poplar, almond? I've heard of those.
Yeah, those. And plane trees by the watering troughs.
Interesting. So is that like ancient science? Or some kind of magical thinking?
Good question. And there are tons of opinions.
Really?
Some say those trees had like medicinal property.
Protecting the animals?
Right. Others think it was more symbolic.
Intriguing.
But the text is clear.
Yeah.
That God helped. Blessing Jacob's efforts, you know.
His flocks boomed. He got wealthy, fulfilling that promise from Bethel.
Exactly.
But you know what they say, right? Money attracts attention, not always the good kind.
Especially from jealous family members.
Exactly what happened next, right? Laban's sons started gossiping.
Yep, accusing Jacob of stealing from their dad.
Oh man, that tension must have been thick.
And God, seeing this injustice, speaks to Jacob in a dream.
A dream? Wow, after 20 years of silence?
20 years, can you imagine?
What did God say?
He reminded Jacob about his vow at Bethel and told him to go home. But the really powerful thing,
yeah,
God specifically says he's seen everything Laban has done to Jacob.
Wow, divine justice in action.
It gave Jacob the push he needed, you know.
To finally make a move.
Yeah, because it was clear Laban wouldn't let him go easily.
So secret exit time.
That's right.
Risky, but I kind of like it.
He calls Rachel and Leah over, away from everyone.
Secret meeting time.
And he tells them everything. Laban's changed. The constant lies.
Ooh, drama.
And most importantly, God's command to return.
Powerful stuff.
He even tells them about a dream with an angel showing him flocks.
What kind?
Mostly striped, spotted, you know, the ones Laban tried to get rid of.
Wow, like a divine seal of approval on his success.
You got it.
I bet Rachel and Leo were furious, especially given their own issues with their dad.
Oh, they were. They let him have it, telling him he's denied them their inheritance.
What did Laban say to that?
We don't know, but what we do know is what Rachel did next.
What's that?
She steals Laban's household gods.
Hold on, stole them? What were those exactly?
They were called teraphim. Now, some scholars think it was about Rachel clinging to old beliefs.
Interesting.
But the text, it suggests something more strategic.
Okay.
See, in ancient law, these teraphim were tied to inheritance claims.
Ah, I see.
So it was like Rachel was trying to grab what was rightfully hers.
Smart move, using those ancient customs to her advantage.
Exactly. So teraphim secured, they pack up and run.
Under the cover of night, no less. Talk about a daring escape.
They headed for Mount Gilead, but Laban.
Oh, yeah, he wouldn't just let them go.
Furious doesn't even describe it. He chases them.
For how long?
7 days, almost 350 miles.
7 days! Wow, talk about a high-stakes chase.
And those numbers, they're probably symbolic, you know?
Okay, how so?
A 3-day head start for Jacob, then a 7-day pursuit, like emphasizing the whole
Like
thing.
an ancient thriller unfolding.
Exactly. The tension building as Laban closes in.
So, what happens when they finally meet? Is it an epic showdown?
It's tense, for sure.
Yeah.
Laban plays the victim, accusing Jacob of stealing his heart, his daughters, his gods.
But not the livestock, interestingly.
Right. It wasn't really about the animals or wealth.
So, what was it about?
Control. He's lost his power. His daughters defied him.
It's all about ego, isn't it?
Totally. And Jacob, he stands up to him, lets out 20 years of frustration.
Go, Jacob.
He lists every way Laban wronged him, even calls on witnesses.
It's like he's finally found his voice. What about the teraphim, though?
Right. Laban wants them back, and Jacob takes this huge risk.
Whoa.
He declares whoever stole them will die.
Whoa, that's a big gamble. Did Laban find them?
Nope. Rachel, she's a quick thinker, claims she can't get up. It's, well, you know.
Ah, that time of the month. Clever. Laban couldn't go near her.
Exactly. And those teraphims were hidden right there with her.
Wow, outsmarting her dad with ancient customs. But even with that settled, things must have been tense.
For sure. But they both knew they needed a solution.
Okay, what happened?
Laban proposes a covenant, a promise not to attack.
Terms and conditions apply, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Jacob can't mistreat his daughters, no marrying other women. And neither of them can cross the boundary markers with bad intentions.
Smart. So, like a formal separation, but with some insurance.
Exactly. They seal it with a cairn, a pillar, oaths, the whole nine yards.
Powerful imagery.
It's like an echo of the covenant God made with Abraham.
Passed down through the generations.
Yeah, and the land Jacob's going back to.
It's not just his home, it's the promised land.
Exactly. But before he gets there, one more big encounter is awaiting.
Ooh, cliffhanger. Can't wait to hear about it.
So Laban, he heads back, and Jacob's at this, like,
Yeah,
crossroads.
staked one conflict,
Yeah.
but oh, remember Esau?
Exactly. He's heading straight into his territory.
The brother he tricked out of his birthright.
Yep. And 20 years later, they're about to meet again.
I bet Jacob wasn't exactly thrilled about that reunion.
He sends messengers ahead, to kind of check the temperature.
Like, hey, Esau, guess who's back in town?
Something like that. But the news they brought back, not exactly comforting.
Oh, no. What did they say?
Esau's on his way, and he's bringing 400 men with him.
400 men?
Yeah.
That's not a good sign.
Sounds a bit threatening, right? A show of force, maybe even revenge.
Yeah, more like an army than a welcome party.
Jacob, he starts to feel the pressure.
What do? Run for the hills.
He divides his people, the livestock, into two camps just in case.
Smart move. Always have a backup plan.
But he also does something else, something really powerful.
What's that?
He prays to God.
Ah, so he's not just relying on his own tricks this time.
Right, in this prayer, it shows how much he's changed.
How so?
He's humble, acknowledges God's faithfulness, pleads for protection.
It's a different Jacob from the one who left, isn't it?
Completely. But prayer alone might not be enough to sway Esau.
Yeah, 20 years of resentment is a lot to overcome.
So Jacob, he takes practical steps too.
Like what?
He sends Esau a massive gift.
How massive are we talking?
Hundreds of animals sent in separate groups.
Wow, a peace offering fit for a king.
And the way it's done is all very carefully staged.
Okay, how so?
Each group of servants, they have specific instructions.
What kind of instructions?
To say, "This is from your servant Jacob, a gift for my lord Esau."
a very deliberate show of submission.
Exactly. The text keeps repeating the word face.
Interesting.
Like, Jacob wants to cover Esau's face with gifts.
Hoping for a favorable reaction when they actually meet.
It really highlights the anticipation and the power dynamics at play.
So while the gift's on its way, what's Jacob up to? Just waiting nervously.
He does something unexpected. He chooses to be alone, spends the night by the Jabbok River.
Just him and his thoughts. Sounds ominous.
And then the text just says, someone wrestled with him until daybreak.
Wait, someone wrestled with him? Who?
It's later revealed to be God himself.
Wow, Jacob wrestling with God. That's a powerful image.
They struggle all night. Neither one can overpower the other.
Do you think it was a literal wrestling match? Or something more symbolic?
That's one of the most debated parts of the Bible.
I can see why. What do you think?
It could be seen as Jacob's inner struggle, his tendency to rely on his own cunning.
And now he's facing a power he can't outsmart.
Exactly. But it's also about transformation.
Okay, how so?
As dawn breaks, the figure, he strikes Jacob's hip, dislocates it.
Ouch, that's a serious injury.
A constant reminder of this encounter. And it's then that Jacob says, I won't let you go unless you bless me.
He's admitting he needs God's help, not just his own cleverness.
A turning point, right?
Yeah.
And God, he responds by giving Jacob a new name.
A new name? What is it?
Israel, meaning he struggles with God, or God prevails.
A new identity, a new understanding of his relationship with God.
But what's interesting is that God doesn't reveal his own name to Jacob.
What do you make of that?
It shows the mystery of the divine. We can struggle, even prevail, but we can never fully grasp God.
That's profound. So Jacob, now Israel, is wounded but transformed.
And he names the place Peniel, meaning face of God.
Another reminder of this encounter. And now it's time to face Esau.
He approaches it carefully, arranges his family in a specific order. Slave girls and their kids first, then Leah and hers, and finally Rachel and Joseph at the back.
A strategic formation.
Protecting the most vulnerable. Putting others' needs before his own.
It shows growth, doesn't it? And then what does he do?
He bows down to Esau.
Just like that.
7 times. A gesture of complete submission, acknowledging Esau as the elder.
7 times, that's a lot. How did Esau react?
Not at all how Jacob expected. He runs to meet him, they embrace, they weep.
Wow, forgiveness after all these years.
With the power of reconciliation, even after so much time and hurt.
It gives me chills just thinking about it. But even then, Jacob's still cautious.
He refuses to travel with Esau.
Really? Why?
He chooses to camp separately at a place called Sukkoth, meaning shelters or booths.
So even though they've reconciled, he still feels vulnerable.
It reveals a lot about his state of mind at this point in his journey.
It's like even with this happy reunion, he's still holding back a little.
Yeah, like he's still carrying that weight, you know?
Of his past, his tricks, the what ifs.
This last part of his journey brings everything together.
The growth, the God stuff. The ancient laws.
That's all there.
He's come a long way from that scared kid running off with a stolen blessing.
And now he's back, rich, 11 sons, called Israel, a name for a whole nation.
But coming back to the promised land, it's not all celebrations, right?
Not exactly. It's careful, strategic, always aware of the past.
I bet he's wondering how people will react.
Not just Esau, everyone in Canaan.
He's got this big family, huge flocks. It could look like an invasion.
Exactly. And the text shows us those anxieties.
Like he's always planning, one step ahead.
He's learned to be cautious.
So how does he handle this return? What's his game plan?
Well, first, he doesn't go straight to his dad in Hebron.
Where does he go?
Sukkoth. He sets up camp, makes it safe, then crosses the Jordan.
Smart. Testing the waters before diving in headfirst.
It shows how much he's changed, how uncertain things still are.
And even after crossing, he still doesn't go straight home.
Nope, he stops at Shechem first.
Shechem, isn't that where Abraham stopped?
You remember? He built an altar there, got God's promise about the land.
So Jacob stopping there, it's like claiming that inheritance.
Connecting with the past, powerful stuff.
A bit risky too, right? The Canaanites are there.
Definitely. And this is where things get complicated with Dinah, Jacob's daughter.
And Shechem, the ruler's son, right?
That's the one.
That story always gets to me, the clash of culture.
And the violence that comes from it.
So remind us, what happens?
Shechem, he sees Dinah, and the text says he seizes her and lies with her.
Consensual or not, that's debated, right?
Big debate among scholars, but regardless.
It triggers this whole chain of events.
Violence, deceit, complicating Jacob's return even more.
His sons, they're furious, right?
They trick the men of Shechem and kill them all.
a brutal revenge.
It darkens the whole homecoming.
It's like that saying, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Even though Jacob's changed, his family still carries that baggage.
And Jacob, how does he react?
He's horrified. He realizes how vulnerable they are, surrounded by enemies.
His sons made things worse.
A harsh lesson that peace can be broken so easily.
So where does he go from there? Back to relying on his wits.
He turns back to God. When things get tough, that's what he does.
Makes sense.
And this time, God tells him to leave Shechem, go back to Bethel.
Bethel, where it all started.
It's full circle.
Yeah.
Back to where he got those first promises.
It's like a reset button.
He's got to purify himself and his family.
Get ready for a new chapter.
Exactly.
So what happens at Bethel?
He does what he knows. Builds an altar, offers sacrifices, renews his commitment to God.
And God
blesses him again. Reaffirms those promises.
It's the end of a long road, isn't it? He started as Jacob the deceiver.
And now he's Israel, father of a nation.
The focus shifts now, right? It's not just his personal story anymore.
It's about a whole people, his legacy, the good and the bad.
So for us listening, what can we learn from all this? It's adventure, trickery, God, change. What does it mean for us today?
Maybe it's that change takes time.
It's messy.
Full of ups and downs.
Facing those parts of ourselves we don't like.
Exactly. Our fears, our need to be in control.
It's about letting go, trusting something bigger.
Something that guides us, challenges us.
And in the end, changes us.
Jacob's story shows us that even our messy lives, they're part of something bigger.
We're connected to the past, the future.
It's about hope and uncertainty all mixed together.
This deep dive has been amazing. A look at Jacob's journey.
It reminds us that even when we mess up,
there's always room to grow, to forgive, to find redemption.
Keep searching, keep learning.
And until next time, keep diving deep.